Appeal number 073520 et al., United States Neurosurgical versus the City of Chicago.
Mr. Metzger.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Donald Metzger, appearing on behalf of the appellant in these two consolidated appeals. One is from the judgment of the bench after trial in a breach of contract case, and the appeal that's consolidated with it concerns the award of costs subsequent to the judgment. I've reviewed the briefs preparing to speak to the court this morning, and I think that perhaps the appropriate issues for me to discuss are the two that I see as the legal issues in the case that the appellant must prevail on in order to succeed, even if the appellant did prove its case in the trial court, which of course we contend that it did. But there are two legal issues on which the court ruled against us that we've presented in this appeal, and I feel that those are the issues to briefly address this morning in this short time that we have. One concerns binding the City of Chicago, the defendant in the breach of contract case, binding the city to a change in the contract. The dispute in this case concerns a breach of contract for the installation of a computer system for the City Department of Health.
And let's cut to the chase on that issue. The contract requires all modifications to be in writing. So doesn't that limit the project manager's authority to enter into an oral agreement or a modification? That's what happened here.
Yes. Under Illinois law, and I don't have the case at my fingertips, but it's discussed in the brief, oral modification is approved under law even where a contract expressly provides that the contract can only be modified in writing. There's a line of cases in Illinois that establish that, and we believe that they apply here and allow what was indeed an oral modification.
But the problem here was that the deputy commissioner agreed to this oral modification, not the procurement officer or purchasing agent.
That raises a different question, in my opinion. Not simply making an oral modification, but in fact the authority to bind the city. That's a different aspect of the question. And we realize that under law in Illinois, both statute and municipal ordinance, that the appropriate authority, which is the purchasing agent, binds the municipal authority in contracts. But the cases hold, I think McMahon is the leading case on this point, hold that although only the corporate authority has the power to bind the city, if that power is expressly delegated, that power can be expressly delegated. And if it is, then a binding agreement can be made under that delegation of power.
Yeah, but we don't have a delegation here.
Well, our position is that we do have a delegation here. And we believe that the delegation is factually established here by the language of the contract itself, which provides that the deputy commissioner, who is the executive project manager in this matter, must approve all changes And secondly, in conjunction with that, the contract provision, which Your Honor just alluded to, which is that no changes shall be valid unless in writing. And the significance of that provision, which is a paragraph in section 5.6 of the contract, the significance of that is it's an additional way of modifying the contract.
There are three. Say with the contract itself, the language of the contract, as I read it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it says that the relating to the scanning implementation work, it says that it is required if two conditions are met, if it's feasible, and if the city decides that it is more appropriate to have, as opposed to data key entry or something, some other system. And if that's what the written contract says, and the city takes the position that it is feasible and more appropriate, why isn't that the end of the matter, and then anything that was done here is not extra work entitled to be paid outside of the agreed price in the contract?
Sure. Well, I think the court is correct in its description of those conditions. And I should point out that there was no feasibility assessment made here, that the city simply determined.
But the city decides if it's feasible.
Yes.
Correct. They don't need assessments. They say, we think it is feasible, period.
Yes, and we're not relying on the fact that there was no feasibility assessment. What we're relying on is the language of the contract, and that really takes us to the second legal issue that I wanted to discuss, and that is what is the obligation of the parties under that scanning provision? The language of that scanning provision is this: that Global will assist the city in assessing the feasibility of alternative data entry modes such as scannable forms and barcoding, and will incorporate changes in hardware and in the Global system. And the phrase incorporate changes in the Global system is the main issue of interpretation in the case. So it's not simply a matter of saying, yes, we want scanning, so you have to do it. It's who has what obligation in the implementation of scanning pursuant to that provision. And the problem is that provision standing alone provides very little insight into the understanding and intention of the parties. But when one examines the contract as a whole, the capability of the Global system, the way it operates, the parties' understanding, the way they proceeded in the implementation of this provision, it becomes clear that Global had certain limited responsibility to implement under that phrase will incorporate changes. It only had the responsibility to receive data from the city's scanning operation and to make whatever modifications were necessary in its system to receive that data and post it into the database that it maintained in the system. The city had the responsibility to get the data into the Global system, and that's clear from the way the parties set about to implement scanning and the other provisions in the contract, which relate to Global interfaces and the receipt of data by the Global system. What went wrong in this case and what necessitated the request by the city for Global to do this additional work is that the city failed to create its end of the scanning system. It could not produce an output of validated data elements to be pushed into the Global system. Even though Global performed its responsibility, which was to provide the city with specifications for the formatting of an output file containing these validated data elements. That wasn't done. In fact, the city spent months struggling with just the preparation of the form that it wanted to scan in. Now, maybe it would be helpful if I gave a brief explanation of the way the scanning works. Scanning by itself simply creates an image, and the result of scanning of an image is sort of similar to the files that we file under electronic filing with the court, a PDF file. You can't do anything with that file. You cannot manipulate the document. You can't extract any data from the document. It's just an image, or it's similar to an image. In scanning, all you have is an image. But what's needed is data, elements of data from this form. So the responsibility of the city was, after its form was prepared, then to use this software, which is called Optical Character Recognition Software, OCR software, to give it data, elements, manipulable data, not just an image. And it took the city months and months. It finally was able to do that. But it could not output the data to Global. It was unable to format what it had to meet specifications, so that all Global received was the equivalent of say a page of words where the letters are scrambled, the spaces aren't appropriate, there's random spaces here and there, and so it's not data that in the format that the Global system can use. I've reserved 2 or 3 minutes for a rebuttal, so I see by that light I'm into my rebuttal time. So
you are.
I hope that's an explanation that helps the court. I'm going to then take my rebuttal time.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Henriquez. May it please the court, the district court ruled that all the work for which USN seeks payment was work that the written contract required Global to perform for the payments it already received from the city under the contract. Today I'll explain why that ruling was correct. The district court also provided 3 alternative rationales for its decision. Time doesn't permit me to address all 3. I'll address 1 of them, and we'll rest on our brief with respect to the others. We'll also rest on our brief with respect to USN's account stated claims, as well as the district court's separate judgment awarding costs to the city. USN claims that Global performed more scanning implementation work than the written contract required it to perform, and that USN is entitled to payment for the extra work under an oral agreement modifying the written contract. The district court correctly rejected that position because it is foreclosed by the plain language of the written contract, which expressly required Global to, quote, incorporate changes in, unquote, its software program necessary to implement data entry by means of scanning. USN contends that this language required Global to perform only a small part of that work. Today reiterated that argument by saying a limited part of that work.
used different formulations in its briefs to the court. Sometimes it says minimal customization. USN said use those terms. Or a not too big a piece of code. Or tailoring the customizable system. And USN claims that the city was required to do most of that work. But the provision at issue does not even suggest such a division of the work. It imposed no obligation on the city to perform any of the work. By its plain language, the provision allocated the responsibility to perform such work solely to Global. USN's argument this morning about how scanning operates does not affect, does not at all
affect. We have to admit it was interesting.
Yeah, I've learned a lot about computer programming and scanning from this, from these briefs. But the law concerning what plain languages of contracts and enactments means is simply flies in the face of their argument. Flies in the face of all that established law. There's simply no way to tease out of this provision any division of responsibility. For the city to perform any work. All the city's obligation, the only obligation of the city under this contract provision, was to determine in advance whether or not it was feasible to do this and whether the city it was beneficial for the city to do this. Once those determinations were made, once it was clear that we were going to go forward, they were going to go forward with the implementation of scanning, the only obligation under this provision was allocated to all of the obligation was allocated to Global. None of it was allocated to the city.
Well, if the Department of Health believed that Global was responsible for validating and editing the data, why did the department hire outside programmers?
It's actually unclear from the opinion who hired those outside programmers. The district court actually concluded that Global did. In our brief, it's very complicated. All the facts are all over the place. In our briefs, we're at the page limit of the briefs in order to indicate that we wanted to indicate that it just didn't matter. It doesn't matter whether or not Bert Quint, the consultant, was hired by the city or whether it was hired by Global, because under the plain language of the contract, the obligation was placed on Global. If the city wants to hire someone else to have that same obligation, to ensure that it gets done, to make sure that there's backup, it can certainly do that. And if that's what happened, then certainly it's consistent with the plain language of the contract. But it doesn't remove the obligation that Global had under the contract, and certainly USN can't recover under that kind of an argument. The district court further ruled in the alternative that USN would not be entitled to any relief even if some of the work Global performed was extra work that the written contract did not require Global to perform. Alan Gold, who was Global CEO, testified that he and Patrick Linehan, who was the city's project manager, had a conversation in which they agreed orally that Global would perform such extra work and that the city would pay for it with funds in addition to its payments under the contract. Linehan, the city's project manager, testified that no such conversation ever occurred. The district court declined to resolve that contested issue of fact. The court concluded that it doesn't matter whether such an oral agreement was reached, since even if it was without effect for three independent reasons. The district court was correct as to all three, and today I'll emphasize one, and if I have time to address the others, I may try to do that. The one I'll address is the one that's at Part 2B of our brief. Under Section 292.050 of the Chicago Municipal Code, the city's ordinances, every agreement with the city must be in writing. And here, the district court ruled that the purported modification of the contract was without effect because it was not in writing. USN did not even mention that ruling in its opening brief to this court. In other words, the inconsistency between the oral contract and the city's own ordinances. USN, of course, has consistently mentioned in its briefs and here today that there's a contract provision of the contract that precluded oral agreements, and mentioned that Illinois case law recognizes that or holds that such provisions of contracts are not can be excused. In other words, that they do not actually preclude oral agreements. But that doesn't help. That law, that case law, does not help USN here, because here we have not only a provision of the contract that precludes oral agreements, we have an enactment by the city of Chicago that does. USN has never addressed that argument. It didn't address that argument in its opening brief, thereby waiving it. And even when we responded in our response brief to this court by pointing out that USN didn't address that argument, they still in their reply brief have never addressed that argument. And that precludes their position in this case. USN also, there were two other rationales that the district court gave. One of them was that the purchasing agent did not approve the contract. There's no doubt about that fact. No one contested, even USN does not contest the fact that the purchasing agent didn't approve it. USN contends that there was a delegation of power from the purchasing agent to Lenahan. In a reply brief, they claim that the delegation was from the purchasing agent to Lenahan. Well, the purchasing agent doesn't have authority to delegate. The Illinois statute that governs purchasing agents for the city of Chicago clearly specifies that there are only two very limited circumstances under which the purchasing agent can ever delegate. And those are in emergency situations when there's shortages of supplies for the city, and in some construction contract situations, the purchasing agent can delegate. The purchasing agent can't delegate any responsibility to contract. The only authority, the only entity that can delegate is the corporate authorities of the city. The purchasing agent is not part of the corporate authorities. The corporate authorities is defined by Illinois case law and by statute to refer solely to the mayor and the alderman, in other words, the city council. Only the city council could delegate. The city council here did not make any delegation. For that reason, there's never been a delegation to anyone other than Lenahan to execute contracts. Lenahan did not execute the contract, therefore the contract was without effect. I think we'll rest on our brief with respect to the rest of the argument. We ask this court to affirm both the district court's judgment in favor of the city on the breach of contract claim and its separate judgment awarding costs to the city.
I want to briefly respond to the delegation question, and then I want to go to the contract provision.
You got 2 minutes, so you got to better talk fast.
Extremely brief. the delegation question, the council is incorrect in the description of the corporate authorities. The case law makes it clear that the purchasing agent, whoever the authority is, in this case the purchasing agent, may delegate the power. Because there happens to be a statute that defines corporate authorities, council has used that to try to limit the ability to delegate. But it's clear from the law the purchasing agent can delegate.
But the bottom line is it wasn't in writing, and you don't dispute that.
Do not dispute that it
so
wasn't in writing.
That's not good for you. I mean, that it doesn't even matter.
No, it certainly doesn't help us. But under Illinois law, an oral modification is enforceable, and also There are a number of writings.
But the contract stated all modifications must be in writing.
Yes, Your Honor. But under Illinois law, the oral modification can still be enforced under the conditions that are laid out. And finally, on the question of the work, the contract provision simply says that Global will incorporate changes. It's clear, just as this court, just as Judge Williams asked counsel, that the parties understood exactly what it meant because the city went about to implement it by hiring outside consultants, buying software. If there, the only way that the obligation could have been entirely Global's would be if it were part of facilities management. And the only way it could be part of facilities management would be that the payments for facilities management would have included it. But since the city paid outside consultants to perform this work and didn't deduct those payments from facilities management payments, it recognized that the work was not included in that provision and was outside the contract scope. Thank you. We ask that the court reverse and remand the case.
Okay. The case will be taken under advisement. We'll proceed.